Hello, and welcome to Tech Latest by Nikkei Asia, where we bring you the freshest updates from the technology sector in Asia. Every episode, one of our reporters from the region will be filling us in on the tech news on their radar, from semiconductors in China, to space travel in Japan, to startups in Indonesia. From Nikkei Asia's Tokyo headquarters, I'm Alice French. In this episode, I'm talking to our business correspondent from Hong Kong, Sissy Zhao, about how some Chinese big tech companies are using non-compete agreements to trap their workers. Hi, Sissy. It's great to have you back on Tech Latest today.
Hi, Alice. And nice talking to you again.
Now, you wrote a story last week called China's Trapped Tech Workers, which is a troubling account of the use, or perhaps we should say misuse, of non-compete agreements by some of China's biggest technology companies. And I want to get into that shortly, but first things first, can you just tell us what is a non-compete agreement for people who might not know, and how common are they in the tech industry worldwide?
Non-compete agreement is a kind of agreement between companies and their employees, which stipulates that an employee, usually senior executives or people with access to core trade secrets, cannot join a rival company or start their own similar businesses for a certain period of time after resignation. And during that time, the company has to pay usually 30% to 50% of the employee's previous monthly salary as a living compensation. The purpose of a non-compete agreement is to protect a company's intellectual property and trade secrets. And of course, there will be legal consequences if an employee breaks such an agreement, which is to say they have to pay a massive financial penalty. And this kind of agreement is actually quite common in most countries. But in the US, it has been banned in some states, such as California, as the agreement is deemed as an unfair tool to restrict workforce mobility. And it is also regarded as one obstacle for innovation. And meanwhile, the Federal Trade Commission of the US has also proposed to ban all non-compete clauses across the country. And the vote for the proposal is expected to happen this month.
Okay, and your story details the extreme length that some big Chinese tech companies are going to retain workers. How do non-compete agreements, as you just described, fit into those efforts?
One of the reasons why I did this story is that the Chinese way is quite extreme. Because even if the Chinese law stipulates that this kind of agreement applies only to senior executives, senior technicians, and those who have the obligation of confidentiality of the employers, Chinese companies are still applying it to young workers, even for fresh graduates who apparently have no access to the so-called trade secrets at all. As a result, most companies are now requiring all new hires to sign a non-compete agreement, despite their role and pay. And in some extreme cases, even cleaning workers will be required to sign such agreement. The company would not necessarily enforce all the agreements they sign with employees because there are, you know, hundreds of thousands of employees resigning every year, right? But once they have that agreement in hand first, they can choose to enforce it to whoever they want after they resign. Also, the law is pretty ambiguous, to be honest, particularly the part about people who have the obligation of confidentiality, because there's no explicit definition of what is confidentiality. So it leaves pretty a big room for companies to abuse it, actually. So whatever the company claims is confidential, it is confidential. And anything could be confidential in that sense. So why are Chinese companies doing this, right? I think one of the obvious reasons is that Chinese tech companies were expanding aggressively, particularly after 2014, with the rise of the new tech champions such as ByteDance and Pinduoduo. And the overall EV sector. Companies have been eagering to hire experienced staff from rivals and keep them. Let alone there's a shortage for technicians such as, you know, algorithm engineers. And the way for Chinese companies to enforce the agreement is also quite extreme. For example, to gather evidence of a former employee joining a rival company, the most common practice is to stalk and film the employee from the moment they leave in their residence to the moment they entered a rival company. And then the stalking and filming would usually last from 1 to 2 weeks. And the footage would be presented to court as evidence. And something surprising to me is that in most cases, the courts would accept the secret filmed footage as evidence because companies argue they were taken in public space. So there's no violation of privacy, etc.
Well, so this kind of application of non-compete agreements really does give the workers no way to escape from a job that they perhaps don't want to be in. And your reporting really took a very worker-first approach. You included the stories of a lot of former workers of these big tech companies, one of whom was a girl called Emma, who was one of the central characters in your story from last week. And she was a victim of this kind of stalking by her previous employer, right?
Yes. She is a typical young Chinese tech worker trapped in the non-compete agreements. So she joined Pinduoduo's grocery unit right after graduation. The unit she joined is widely known for its high-intensity work. There, Emma had to work for more than 12 hours a day, and she told me that she didn't have a single day off, even Sundays, during her 8 months stint there. She went to office at around 11 a.m. and it would mostly be 2 or 3 a.m. when she went to bed. After around 8 months, she resigned as she felt she was about to die. That's literally what she told me. And during that 8 months, she lost more than 5 kilograms of weight. And she was also diagnosed with hypothyroidism. When she joined Pinduoduo, she signed a non-compete agreement without any hesitation because she thought that was just part of the standard procedure, and she believed that Pinduoduo wouldn't even bother chasing her as she was so junior and she didn't hold any trade secrets. So after resignation, she joined an affiliate of Alibaba, one of Pinduoduo's biggest rivals. And she thought, you know, she wouldn't be chased because there was no overlap. And, you know, at Pinduoduo, she was dealing with food vendors for their domestic market. But at Alibaba, she's dealing with toy manufacturers and targeting overseas market. But soon, she received a labor arbitration claim from Pinduoduo requesting her to pay 280,000 yuan as compensation for her breach of the agreement. And that was equivalent to her 3 years' income. In the evidence Pinduoduo presented to the arbitrator, she swore she had been stalked and secretly filmed. She even saw the man that had been stalking her, who is a middle-aged man with a big belly, in one of the reflections in the footage. And she had no idea that she was stalked until she saw the footage. Because she was from a very poor family, and her father is disabled and needs her financial support every month, there was no way for her to pay the compensation. And then because of the constant concern over the unaffordable compensation, she was diagnosed with depression, and she even tried to kill herself on a chilly night in February. But fortunately, her boyfriend found her in time after she left a suicidal note on social media.
Wow, it's a pretty troubling story. And as I say, it's just one of many in your piece from last week. Now, you mentioned that Chinese courts often do accept this secret filming footage as evidence in cases about these non-compete agreements. But how do the courts usually rule in these cases? Of course, China is a communist country, so one might expect the judiciary to be taking the workers' side in disputes like these. But it seems that the big companies usually win out in the end.
That is a very interesting question indeed. So if you look at China's labor law and labor contract law, they are indeed very protective of the workers by words. I mean, between 2000 and 2010, when China's economy was really booming, the country enacted a flurry of legislation aimed at protecting workers' rights. And that was part of an effort to maintain social stability, actually, because social stability is one of the top priorities of the Chinese Communist Party. And those legislations made it very difficult for business to fire unfit workers. And then MUS even encountered strong objections from legal experts who argued that, you know, those laws placed a heavy burden on businesses, thus it would impact the economy. But as China's economic growth started to slow after 2010, Beijing began to prioritize creating a more favorable environment for businesses, which means they were less emphasized on workers' rights. And as I explained in the story, the number of court rulings on non-compete agreement dispute started to rise from 2014. And the number of court rulings related to non-compete agreement in 2020 was four times higher than that in 2015. And I went through hundreds of relevant court rulings on this matter, and I found out that, you know, in most cases, local courts would rule in companies' favor, even though the companies didn't provide what trade secrets those former employees had obtained or what losses they have suffered from those employees' departure. In most of those cases, the judges seemed to only look at the agreement that they signed. The rationale behind this appears to be, you know, okay, you signed the agreement and you have to pay the price. However, the judges didn't really consider why junior staff would have to sign those agreements, right? Although it appears to be a mutual agreement, at least the judge should look at the facts, including, you know, if those staff really hold trade secrets and if those employees are really using what they obtain in their new workplaces.
Right, absolutely. And as you've explained, this extreme use of non-competes is really damaging and quite frankly terrifying for many workers in China's tech industry. But what about the sort of wider impact on the sector as a whole? Do experts think that this approach is going to be beneficial for China in the long term, particularly as rivalry with the US heats up even further?
All the experts that I talked to have concerns over the impact on innovation, particularly as the US-China tech war is deepening at this time. Most previous studies have suggested that, you know, workforce mobility has a positive effect on innovation. And of course, IP protection is important, but it doesn't mean that there should be no boundaries and the agreement should not be misused to retain general competition, which is a must for innovation.
Right. Well, thank you very much, Sissy, for giving us that rundown. And I would recommend any listeners to go and check out your story for the full details. I'm sure that you'll be following this topic closely as it unfolds. Thank you for coming on today from Hong Kong, and I hope that we'll hear from you again soon.
Thank you, Alice.
That's all for this episode. You can read more of Sissy's reporting, along with a host of other stories about Asia's tech industry, on Nikkei Asia's website, asia.nikkei.com. And if you like what you hear, why not subscribe to our weekly Tech Asia newsletter, which will be delivered to your inbox every Thursday. There's a link to sign up in the show notes. And whilst we've still got you, if you're enjoying Tech Latest and would like to support us, please do give us a follow on whichever podcast platform you use. We also really appreciate any reviews you can leave, as these help new listeners to find our episodes. Thank you very much for listening, and check back in next week for more updates on the tech trends that matter.